Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm Kimberly Atkinstor, and this is Justice by Design, a podcast where we look for solutions to some of the most pressing issues we face in our society, because those solutions don't just happen, they are carefully done by design. So that's not the only reason why I call this podcast Justice by Design. For those of you who know a little about me, it's also a nod to another love in my life, and that is fashion. I used to design bespoke women's wear for many, many years. And then when the pandemic hit and I had a chance to slow down and think about what the future of that would look like, I wanted to only move forward in that endeavor if I could do it in a way that caused no damage to the planet. Because climate and climate justice, protecting the planet and the people in it, particularly the most vulnerable, is something that is dearly, dearly close to my heart. And I started trying to find the playbook for sustainable fashion. And I quickly found that there is none. There was none. I was shocked to know that given the enormous amount that the fashion industry must contribute to climate change, that there aren't people already, the people at the top of the industry, really steering the ship in the right direction to ensure that we can look good without doing damage to the planet. But it really wasn't. In fact, my research as I looked into this led to a series that I wrote for the Boston Globe called Not So Fast Fashion, that identified just how big of a problem fashion is for the planet. 10% of the global carbon emissions are produced by the fashion industry. Think about that. And in addition to that, there are hundreds of billions in textiles that are either created for the fashion industry and never sold, and that is called dead stock, or it is consumed, people give it away or throw it away, and it ends up rotting in landfills here in the United States and also shipped to the global south. Countries in Africa and in South Asia receive this, where it can rot and burn in landfills, setting off toxic chemicals. It can end up in waterways where the dyes and the chemicals go into water that people use to drink and to bathe in and to use in their businesses. It's a massive, massive problem that harms not just the planet, but the people in it. But in researching that project, I also found innovators who are rolling up their sleeves and finding new solutions, even if on a smaller scale, but scaling them up so that the big wigs in the industry can learn from them how to build a more sustainable future in the fashion industry. I talked to people like Bobby Colliday, who is a fashion designer who has worked in the biggest fashion houses in the world, like Balenciaga, but left that behind to return to his native Uganda to start a business there and to bring fashion to that to bring the fashion industry to that country, to hire people and to use that those artisans that are there. After all, Uganda used to be one of the biggest producers of cotton in the world. But that industry was decimated by the practice of shipping used clothing to the global south in bales or barrels, and it ending up contributing to the climate disaster by rotting, burning, setting off toxic chemicals, and really impacting the people there. So what Bobby did was he used his label, Bugazi Hill, to create a new line called Return to Sender, where he sourced from that returned, discarded fashion to make high-end clothing that is sold in the West. in places like right here in the United States. And that line is called Return to Sender. I'm actually wearing a fabulous dress from it. I love that concept so much. And those are the sort of solutions that I was looking for, whether it's a New York company that turns garbage into designer bags, someone like Bobby who creates high fashion out of what would have been discarded trash that was damaging, and someone else who is finding solutions to fashion's climate problems is Mark Litos, who joins me today. He's co-founder of Refried Fashion, based in my adopted home state of Massachusetts. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Nice to be here.
So tell us what you do there at Refried Apparel.
Yeah, we are an upcycle clothing company. So we partner with brands and retailers and organizations to cycle their dead stock inventory back into the marketplace. It's a pretty creative process, but we've been scaling. We've been leading the upcycle surge in the U.S. for some time now at scale. So it's been an interesting journey.
And so tell us a little bit about that journey, your origin story, because it's sort of similar. You know, I said that I come from a love of fashion, had a brand, but wanted to make sure I was sustainable. Tell us about your origin story.
Sure. Actually, my wife started the company, so it's a woman owned company. She's got really quite a skill set, but it started really by hobby. She's always looking to repurpose things, very frugal, doesn't like to throw things away. So she started upcycling some of our own clothing and making some pretty cool stuff. As things grew, she got involved in farmers markets and the concept started to grow even greater. Next thing you know, we have this sort of business that we put together, and it sort of just, you know, found its way forward with sustainability, that whole topic starting to grow, getting louder and louder, understanding that dead stock inventory, unsaleable, unsold clothing is a massive problem. And when we realized that we had a solution to solve this industry-wide problem, we sort of, you know, really sort of focused on the process and figured, how do you scale this, right? This is not that easy. But here we are today, and we've partnered with some amazing brands and organizations, and we got a real good handle on it.
Yeah, so, you know, you're talking about dead stock, which, as you said, it's the tremendous amount of clothing items, raw materials, raw textiles that are produced for the fashion industry that end up never going to market, that ends up never seeing the light of day. It just sits somewhere unused, and much of it often ends up in landfills where it creates a tremendous number of climate issues. So why was it important for you to focus on that as a textile and giving that a new life?
Well, you're absolutely right. The amount of unsold clothing at the retail level from brands producing product that never makes it to market or is just simply excess is staggering. And you're right. This stuff finds its way to landfills more often than not, incinerators, and obviously that contributes to climate change in a big way. When we realized the size of the problem, we knew that there is a solution. It's just, again, how do you scale this? But we really focused on partnerships, working with, you know, like-minded folks. And fortunately enough, as this topic gets louder and louder and becomes a critical initiative, if you will, leading brands and retailers who really see the problem, who are looking for responsible ways to deal with it, started to engage, and together we're doing some really impressive programs that again are addressing this problem head on.
So, but before we dive into what some of those programs are, one thing I wanted to do with my series for the Globe is sort of show how innovators like you and others who are changing the game can teach the industry more broadly how to still do what they do, but do it in a way that's kinder to the planet. And I found in my reporting time and time again, the issue is money. The issue is always money. Mm-hmm. If the industry is doing something a certain way and it's working, it's really hard to steer a big ship in a different direction to make them stop doing that, especially when, even in the short term, there is a possibility of a financial hit. So what do you say to those who say, I hate climate change too, but you know, if we change it, we'll take a hit and we won't be able to stay in business.
Yeah. It's a really, you know, you're absolutely right with regard to, bottom line, and profitability. But what's really interesting, and I think why we've been successful, is when you look at upcycling as a solution, we're taking dead stock inventory that has no value. And so we're an alternative to waste. And so when you can take something of no value and turn it into high profit margin stuff, because it's a creative process, pieces are unique and refreshing. They appeal to eco-minded customers and actually even the younger demographics, which is really important to retailers and brands today. But when you can take something of no value, turn it into profit margin, right? That's a new revenue stream. So it's not that hard to convince, you know, a CFO or a CEO that it's a smart business strategy. It's newfound revenue. And at the same time, you're doing something good for the environment. So really, it's sort of a win-win-win. And then when consumers are embracing it, now you have sort of a model that really, really works.
Yeah, and I am so heartened, particularly with younger people who really are aware of this, who really do want to make purchases that are kind to the planet. You have this consumer base that is sitting right there. And in my report, again, I'll link my whole series in the show notes, but we're talking, if for listeners who want to get an idea of how much we're talking about, the fashion industry is responsible for more than 100 million tons of plastic in their textile waste. We're not even talking about the textiles themselves, which are full of dyes and chemicals and other things, but the microplastics in these clothes, particularly fashion clothes that are used and thrown away, it's full of polyester. And that is ending up as waste on our planet every year. And then we also have just millions of metric tons of actual textiles that are discarded, either dead stock or secondhand post-consumer products that end up in landfills. But to your point, a McKinsey study found that if these materials are recycled into new clothing, it would be worth $100 billion of extra revenues in the fashion industry. $100 billion with a B.
Yeah, it really is incredible. And you're hitting on some good points. You know, there is a lot of good progress being made with regard to creating more sustainable fashions, because obviously polyester doesn't break down in landfills, and typically it's incinerated, which is obviously a bad thing. And while progress is being made, looking at ways to produce fabrics that are much more sustainable, upcycling is much different, right? So upcycling is taking stuff that's already made. So there's there's no energy, there's no water usage, there's no harmful dyeing methods, there's no emissions. You know, we focus in the U.S. That's our market, and the nature of upcycling sort of works best, within the United States, as opposed to shipping and goods back and forth over the oceans and all the maritime emissions. Right. So anyway. There's so much stock. I can't say that enough. To keep companies like us busy for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. There's enough. I learned from reporting this that there are enough textiles in existence now.
Yeah.
To clothe every human for the next 100 years.
Exactly. I think I want to just touch back on the demographics too.
Yeah.
Consumers are getting a lot smarter today. They just are. And we're more aware of the concerns for our planet. And that's, you know, that's something that as that topic gets louder and louder, people are starting to take a hard look at looking, being more responsible and looking at innovative ways to avoid, you know, the impact that the Earth is receiving. But it's really with smarter consumers and consumers that are willing to actually consumers who want something different too, right? Something unique, something fresh. It really upcycling is really it does just that. Yeah. It's a very creative process. So the designs evolve. I mean, the silhouettes might change or might stay the same. But pieces are unique and refreshing. And let's face it, who doesn't like something that's, you know, one of a kind, right?
Oh, come on. I'm a fashion girl. I totally love things that are one of a kind and unique and in a way, it's a way of expression. So you're exactly right. So yeah, no, your point is so important about the demographics because for fashion to work as an industry and to change as an industry, there has to be both the demand and the supply, right? And the more consumers are aware, the more they learn about the impact of fashion on the planet, the more that they learn about the impact, not just on fashion, but on its people. You know, when you have these cheaply produced clothing that are made out of plastic and other bad stuff, it's usually being produced by people not making a living wage, working in dangerous conditions. We know of the Rana Plaza disaster. That's a key example of that. So yeah. When you focus on better materials that are better for the planet and using what you have and creating jobs to take what is here and turn that into textiles in a fashionable industry, you can actually pay people. So this is also a good human rights issue. Better fashion is better for people and the planet.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we're proud of that fact, too. You know, we happen to be, our factory is in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which is New Bedford and Fall River was once the textile capital of the world. And so we have a tremendous deep pool of talent, skilled workers, cutters and sewers and whatnot. And that just happened by chance. So the stars aligned, right? Yeah, it's creating jobs is important, particularly in the U.S. and where, you know, where we actually have our facility, but we also tap into home sewers and these small businesses, mom-and-pop shops that have, you know, their small facilities at home. And so it's a wonderful thing when you can, you know, you can really tap into that, those resources and you know, with good paying wages, you know, to support the demand, which is a wonderful thing.
So let's talk more about Refried Apparel, what you make, and some of the programs that you are doing, partnering with bigger brands so that you are allowing, you're not just creating sustainable fashion yourself, you are enabling this to be on a broader scale.
Yeah. The great thing is we can apply our model to every sector. So we're actually the go-to upcycle resource for the major leagues, NFL, MLB, NHL, so on. We partner with we're in numerous colleges and universities, partnering with companies like Follett, who run, you know, bookstores for, you know, 1,200 plus schools. We're in the resort sector. And as I said earlier, we also partner with brands like Champion and Antigua. These are big brands who believe in sustainability, who are visionary and are willing to sort of, you know, take that leap of faith. And again, lead by example. As more brands and retailers and institutions embrace sustainability and they see the impact, they see the success, they see the promise, you know, it starts to really create a groundswell of opportunities. College industry is amazing. Again, students, right? We all know they want to save the world. They want to save the planet. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful segment for Refried. We partner with retailers like Macy's. And these are large organizations that, again, when they're, you know, they overbuy or fashion changes or it was not, you know, a good design or something that just didn't move. Again, it's just amazing to me how much stock builds up. and sits in back rooms and warehouses, right? Now they're paying to store that stuff. And why not take that, put it to good use, make it profitable, and again, you know, do something really, take unsaleable goods and turn them into very saleable goods that are good for the environment and also greater aesthetic value. So,
yeah, you know, I didn't even think of that aspect that you bring up, and it's the fact that all of these unused textiles require storage, which just creates a bigger carbon footprint for these companies in terms of trying to have a good climate controlled place to store this stuff. So by reducing that amount of storage, that's why in my, you know, tiny little bespoke business, I only sourced textiles that sold by the yard, because I did not want to keep big bolts of fabric that are extra. And I tried to the best of my ability to use, you know, scrap materials, as put it on the inside of the garment, you know, use it as facing, use it as you know, seam tape and other things like that. But, you know, not every, I was just one person doing that. And again, that takes a lot of work, a lot of, you have to pay people to be able to do that.
What's interesting about our program, it's truly a program. It is a disruptive model, right? Anything is that's new is sort of different, and you have to look at it through a different lens. But when you see the inherent benefits, it's a lot easier to move that ball forward. But our program is really interesting, and what's happening now, and which is really a great thing, is when we partner with a retailer or bookstores in colleges and retailers, you know, from as big as Macy's to small mom and pops, once they do it and they have the success and they see the sell through and the response from consumers, it becomes routine. So what they used to throw away or donate, they now, you know, put it, and that goes to refried.
Yeah. Okay?
So you know, we just get these routine, hey, Mark, I'm sending another pallet. Hey,
oh,
Mark,
that's great.
Six more boxes. And it is. And so, you know, they're benefiting. It becomes, we've actually working with large organizations and leagues in the sports and entertainment, whereby make it a company-wide protocol, right? So it no longer needs to go to a landfill. It goes to an upcycling facility. And again, when you can sort of change minds like that and get them into that routine, into that rhythm, and that's what's happening for this company. It's again, you're achieving your goals and your and it's really starting to get the wheels turning. So we're at a really great point in our company's history, making that impact and becoming a partner to all of these wonderful, you know, retailers and brands and institutions.
So, Mark, what would you say to people who are interested in doing that? Either people who are already in the fashion or textile industry, or people who are thinking about doing it, because it's not easy. I mean, just me trying to, this series was born out of the fact that I was looking for ways to bring back my fashion line in a climate conscious way. And it was so hard to find that way. And it wouldn't have been easy. And I'm sure you ran into some roadblocks, that this wasn't all smooth sailing. Can you talk a little bit about that? What barriers are in place and how those can be overcome?
Sure. The good news is, you know, high tide floats all boats, and you're seeing a lot of unique pieces, fashion pieces, even on Etsy and you know, platforms like that, which is great. But that's not at scale. Scaling this, to be honest with you, was not easy. A couple of things happened to us, and call it luck, call it fate. But again, our location being in a textile district with a deep pool of talent, a lot of the credit goes to Lisa, the founder, her vision, her ability to look at lots of stuff and sort of come up with processes and methods that are efficient enough to scale to make product affordable. Look, and I don't want to discourage anybody, okay? I mean, if you put your mind to it, you can do it, but there's a lot that goes into it, and it took us an awful lot to get to where we are today. So I would, first of all, I think here in the U.S., what we've been able to do is is scale. We have a very large operation, and we partner with lots of companies. Mm-hmm. So if you have dead stock, rather than try to do this yourself, do what you do. Do what you do good. Focus on your core business and partner with somebody like us who can help you be that partner. And I think from a retailer or a brand perspective, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay?
Trying to sort of recreate what we're doing, it's going to take a huge investment, a lot of time, and again, it's not easy. But again, look. As you said a moment ago, how much dead stock inventory, and we do post-consumer and end-of-life inventory. Mm-hmm. But there's enough for keep hundreds of companies like ours afloat, right? We can't do this all by ourselves. So we, you know, part of the biggest challenge, I think, for us starting off was educating people. Mm. You do what? You want me to send your stuff and you're going to do what with it? I mean, it's just a long sales cycle.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of small steps and successes to start to grow and get other people sort of paying attention. So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, right, and a sales standpoint, I'm constantly showing people successes and using this as an example. And when you do it from peer to peer, you do it for one university and other universities see it, it's a little easier for them to sort of follow suit.
Right.
And that goes with brands and retailers and you know, of every stripe. So again, you focus, you have the vision, you have a goal, you know, it's a viable solution to an industry-wide problem. And we just kept driving. And here we are in a good spot, again, working with, you know, some very impressive brands and retailers and partners. And again, it's, I would encourage anybody to look into this, as either in a partnership,
yeah,
or in, you know, sort of exploring how you can do this, and scaling it, you know,
Yeah. Yeah, the partnership is really a good way to start bringing in that's how you connect the innovator with the sort of, you know, legacy in the industry. And what I've seen, I talked to a lot of other designers and other innovators who were doing exactly that, forming partnerships with bigger companies. And that allows them to scale, that allows them to hire more people, that allows all these things to get in motion to change little by little.
Yeah.
It's re-steering the entire industry, yeah, little by little. So I want to talk a little bit about the consumer side first, because after my series ran, I heard from so many people, it's like, I care so much about the planet and I want to make good choices. But how do you know? I mean, it's hard to know even what the supply chain of a garment is when you buy it. That information is not put in front of you. You have a little tag that might list some, you know, what it's made out of, but it's incomplete. And you certainly don't know whether these things are upcycled, right? How to find that. So what advice do you give as somebody who is in this industry as to how to make better purchasing choices?
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on at the consumer level or with the consumer in mind to help them make these right choices. Unfortunately, as you started by saying that, you know, it's driven by profitability and unfortunately, I'm sure you're familiar with the term greenwashing.
Correct. Yes.
There's a lot of brands and misleading consumers and it's a shame. Again, you know, upcycling is probably the cleanest method available. So that's a good thing. But from a consumer standpoint, I would say, look, know the brands, ask the tough questions, and see what kind of responses you get, and educate yourself. We have articles on our website about greenwashing and the different terms that folks are using that are really sad. I think until the industry has ways to track, you know, materials from the source all the way to the finished product, I think you're going to have to do a lot of your own research and ask the tough questions for the brands that you're supporting. So one thing that we did, and it took us a long time, but it really helped advance our solution, was working with the FTC to get FTC compliant language.
Oh.
So one of the challenges when we're working with companies like Macy's or Champion is, Mark, you know, the consumer needs to know what the products are made up of, right? The materials. And we mix materials. Mixed media is really cool because it sort of adds that upcycle appeal, and
yes,
you can get very creative. But we couldn't possibly do that because each piece is different. So working with FTC and getting them to understand upcycling, because even at the you know, that level, this is all new, and they don't fully understand. So we've been sort of a conduit in helping them understand, and I'm pleased to say that
helping the Federal Trade Commission understand what this means.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And the benefits and so on. So the good news is as we educated them and they understood, they were willing to help us write language for our label that satisfied, you know, these wonderful partners that we have today.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was a huge win for us, because honestly, these organizations, from a legal perspective, couldn't embrace it without that FTC compliant language.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So that's really important. I mean, these things may seem, you know, in the weeds, but it's so important for people, both the consumers and the producers in this space, to know you can find a solution to things if you roll up your sleeves and you look for them, even on the regulatory front, on the construction front, on the manufacturing front, sourcing front, and purchasing front. Mark, tell us what lies ahead for Refried. I see you there. You have, for those listening, he has some of his great wares behind him. He's sitting in his warehouse in New Bedford. Tell us what lies ahead for the company.
So what I think I'm most excited about is as companies of all stripes really embrace sustainability, and there are, you know, regulatory measures and pressures that are sort of, you know, holding companies accountable, right? So today we have, you know, CSR goals and ESG criteria that companies set. You know, we want to be carbon neutral by 2040, whatever those goals might be. Mm-hmm. What I'm really excited about is upcycling allows us to provide valuable data to track things that can actually help you achieve those goals faster. Certainly by weight. How much clothing are we diverting from landfills in by pounds or tons? Okay, that's valuable data. How much GHG emissions are we avoiding, or water conservation? How much water are we saving by buying upcycled products versus new products? Yeah. It's really, you know, that data that we can provide is gold. So as companies start to understand, look, there's a lot of good work being done under the umbrella of sustainability, because it embraces so much, you know, infrastructure, vehicles, food waste, single-use plastic. And I mean, it's a big, big, broad umbrella. But finally, and I think we've been the driver behind this, they're starting to look at clothing waste as part of their sustainable strategy. It's an industry-wide problem. It's bigger than people can imagine. The numbers are staggering. You touched on a few of them. And so when they see that, and it can help them achieve their goals, look, it's a win for them, it's a win for us, it's a win for the consumer, and it's a win for the environment.
Okay, well, Mark Litos, co-founder of Refried Apparel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, what I love so much about that conversation with Mark is that there are ways to cut through and find solutions, even to what might seem like the most gnarly problem. I couldn't imagine being in the industry and coming up against a federal regulatory problem, but then saying, you know what, I can work with the Federal Trade Commission to come up with a solution. And that's exactly what he and others in this industry are doing. And that is something that we all as consumers can do. It may not be easy to figure out where to buy clothing, which brands are doing positive things and how to make upcycling work for you, even if you don't, like me, have a sewing machine. And, you know, I learned that there are websites, like a website called Good On You that's based in Australia, that ranks how brands are doing in terms of climate justice. They can't be paid. The brands don't reach out to them. They do all the work and bring it to you, and so that you can make a better informed decision. Things like that. Creating better labels like Mark is doing, that is helping consumers make better decisions about climate and about the future. And I can't think of a better thing to have talked about today. It is both climate week and it's also fashion month. And bringing those two together in a way that means so much to me is why I started Justice by Design. Thanks for joining me. Don't forget to follow wherever you get your podcasts. Like us there. Subscribe on YouTube. It is free, so you never miss an episode. And I'll see you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.